Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up and deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And once again this week we are broadcasting from Las Vegas at the Rio, the home of the 2009 World Series of Poker. I'm Paul Harris along with Dennis Phillips. The poker coach Joe McGowan will join us in a little while. Also, Jamie Gold, the 2006 main event champion, who recently played in the Champions Invitational against a lot of other former WSOP main event champions. We'll also introduce you to the commissioner of the WSOP, that's Jeffrey Pollack, and we'll get an update from Brian Spadaro of the Poker Players Alliance on the poker legislation in Congress. But first, Dennis, talk a little bit about the thing you recorded for ESPN, which you promoted a couple of weeks ago on this show. You and Oral Hershiser and a bunch of other poker players and some wiffle ball.
In fact, they're going to have two or three different ones to really embarrass the heck out of all of us on that. So, yes, I get to stand at the plate, and I have this Cy Young Award pitcher standing out there laughing at us and having fun. But to give you an idea, they were doing an interview with me. I was leaning against the screen to the side, and as he's throwing it, Oral hollers out at me, "Hey, Dennis." And I turn to look, and this ball is coming straight at my head. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's halfway to me already. Mm-hmm. So I react and put my hand up, and, of course, it curves about 4.5 feet away and doesn't even come close to me.
Wow.
He just kind of waves at me.
Now, is that him as a great Cy Young pitcher, or is that just the nature of wiffle ball?
It's a combination of both. Uh-huh. Let me tell you, he knows what he's doing with it, but he had so much fun with this wiffle ball. In fact, they had two different wiffle balls out. We got to practice with regular white ones and that and have some fun. We each got about 10 swings. And then they brought out the other wiffle balls with this red stripe around them, brand new ones, a little bit smaller.
That sounds like something our friend Amarillo Slim would do.
I'm telling you, he'd have been right in the middle of it.
Set you up with the regular ball. Okay, if you practice with this. Oh, we're not using that for the actual
there
event.
You go. In fact, Oral out there, the first one he threw a practice one. The catcher is standing there, and it goes about 5 feet outside because it curves so much.
Wow.
He could curve that ball. It'd start 2 feet to the left of you and turn around and actually go outside where you couldn't reach it with a bat.
Wow. So who was there besides you? Because they invited about a half dozen people, right?
Yeah, there were a half a dozen of us there, all PokerStars pros on that, and they had two different teams. On my team, I had Havad Khan. And I had Greg Raymer. Mm-hmm. So the three of us, we were going to compete against each other and then one person go for the finale on that. And it was, okay, we might as well get the embarrassment out of the
way. Well, who was the other team?
The other team was Joe Hashem, the cricket player, of course.
Yeah.
Vanessa Russo and Chad Brown.
Okay.
So 3-3 over there. We got to compete against each other, and then they were going to go head-to-head to finish the thing up.
So each of you steps up to the plate, and you have 10 swings against Oral?
Actually, no. We got 5 swings against him on this one. We'd had some practice, and now we have 5 swings on it.
All right. And is this taking place at just a local baseball field?
Yeah, just right around here locally. No big deal. Uh-huh. A few cameras, not very many people. You know, they tried to keep the embarrassment to a minimum on this thing.
Yeah, we're only going to televise it.
Yeah, that's all. Show it to a few million people.
We would never embarrass you in public. Roll it!
Anyhow, and I got the lucky thing of being the first one up there.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, as Oral's laughing and everything and says, "Be ready, here it comes."
Now, I will remind our listeners, when we talked about this 2 weeks ago before we came out here to Vegas and you said you were going to be doing this,
yep.
I had said an over-under number for a number of times you would put bat to ball, not necessarily hitting it fair, but even just fouling it off.
Yep.
Because we're talking about a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher here, and we're talking about a wiffle ball, and that can be tough. When you're going up an 11-year-old who's throwing it, let alone Oral Hershiser, I set that number at 1.5.
Okay.
So if you got 1, you were under. If you got 2, 3, 4, 5, you were over. How many did you actually make contact with?
4 of the 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Couldn't put a ball fair anywhere.
No?
No.
Fouled them all off.
I fouled 4 of them off of the 5. And I will say this, the first couple of them up there, he didn't bring the heat completely. So it was a little easier to do.
Bringing the heat with a wiffle ball.
Believe me, bringing the heat with a wiffle ball. The last couple he threw up there was, you know, basically, okay, close my eyes, swing, let's see if I can make contact. Not quite that bad. But anyway, I fouled 4 of the 5 off.
Yeah.
All right. Didn't get a ball in play. I'm done.
Okay.
All right. Havad comes up there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't touch a ball.
Okay.
0 for 5.
All right.
Greg Raymer comes up there. Fouls 1 off. None fair. 15 swings, not a ball in play. He's out there on the pitching mound laughing his head off.
I'm sure.
You know, and we're over here going, this is getting really bad, guys.
Uh-huh.
So, two more swings for each of us, right? Fouled one off again, missed one totally.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Havat, I think he fouled one off this time.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
Done. Greg Raymer walks up there.
Yep.
Being the good poker player that he is, looks at us, smiles, and bunts.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to give him credit because if Oral's got that kind of control on it, the fact that he can even get the bat around and seriously.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Bunt the ball. And he bunts it fair?
He bunts it fair. It rolls almost halfway to third.
So,
my gosh.
So according to the rules, he's the best on your team and he's going to advance to the next round?
Yeah. Yeah. Oral actually ran over toward the third baseline and tried to blow it foul. But, you know, not that we've ever seen that before on a diamond, of course.
No. All right. How'd the other team do? Hashem and Russo and Brown. Which, by the way, is a bad law firm. Don't ever use them.
Well, Joe kept telling him to throw him lower and lower for his cricket so he could get his underswing on it. I got to give a credit. I don't think he touched another ball, but he smacked one. Solid line drive. Joe by far had the best hit.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Chad and Vanessa didn't do anything, although I don't know how hard the pitch was, but Vanessa did trickle one back to the pitcher. So there were three people that got one fair.
Uh-huh.
Greg by bunting, Joe by hitting, and Vanessa by being Vanessa.
Oral served up a meatball for her. Is that what you're implying here?
I did not say that.
I know. Okay.
I would have served one up for her.
Absolutely.
Good grief.
Yes.
Yes, I was fully embarrassed by it, but I had a heck of a lot of fun. He's a great guy. He really is.
Yeah. Okay, we got to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk with Jamie Gold and then the commissioner of the WSOP, Jeffrey Pollock, all ahead here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our show tonight is once again brought to you in part by PokerStars. And Dennis Phillips, of course, a part of Team PokerStars Pro, and I see a lot of your buddies walking around with that patch on their arms.
It is so impressive. They've got the special patch now that says Team Pro with the flag from your particular country beneath it. The 34 of us that are out here now participating are walking up and down the halls, and my gosh, you have the Chris Moneymaker from 03 and Greg Raymer from 04 and Joe Hashem from 05. You know, it's just unbelievable the quality of play that you have there if you play on PokerStars and get to play with these guys. And then you look at last year's WSOP, and what is it? The first, the second, the third, and the fourth place finishers.
That would be Peter Eastgate, Yvonne Demidov, you, Dennis Phillips, and Elon Schwartz.
All on PokerStars. So mm-hmm. If you want to play quality, if you want to play the best of the best, you need to go to PokerStars and play a game.
Get on PokerStars.net, download the software, and you're right there playing against Team PokerStars Pro. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, back to the Lumiere Place Final Table, where Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris are talking poker on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. This is the watch that I wear, guys. If you see me on the final table, I guarantee on my wrist will be a Reactor Watch on that. They have, right now, a huge, huge display over here at the Venetian Casino. It's a nationwide showing of all the premier jewelry watches that you can find. Theirs is a blowaway display. You ought to go over there. It's all sorts of styles, men's, women's, whatever it is, a huge display, and they'll do it. They are known for their durability. They're known for their reliability. On that rare occasion, too, when one of their watches has a problem, they will repair it ASAP. It's not one of these 6-8 weeks you did the watch mailed off and you never see it back. This is the watch that is worn by pro athletes all around everywhere. Albert wears one. I can name you a dozen more. Reactor Watches, an awesome watch. I love it. I wear it all the time on that thing. Reactor Watches, happy to have them as sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table.
We are back now in the Dennis Phillips Suite, high above Las Vegas at the 2009 World Series of Poker, and joined by former world champion Jamie Gold, who was just a guest with us a few weeks ago on the phone and now is here in person. Great to see you.
You too.
You were in the Champions Invitational Tournament. What was that like?
It was great. It was It was really interesting, really fun. We actually had these two limited edition leather jackets that we had signed by every single main event champion, which are the only two pieces of memorabilia I think that exist in the world that have every main event champion that have signed them. So we're going to auction those off for charity. They're two Affliction jackets, and I'm going to have my first big charity event at the end of the summer, probably the last week of August in L.A., and we're going to auction those off. So we were very excited that that happened, and then I busted out in 5 minutes.
You know, well. I was playing in the 1K at the time, and I heard that you were the first one out, and I thought to myself, I know what Jamie did. He went in there and thought, I don't need a classic Corvette. Because that's the prize, right?
Yeah, it was. But no, it wasn't that. I wasn't really paying attention. It was the first three hands, and I wasn't really paying attention. And there's no excuse. It's just if it was the main event, you know, people said, oh, my God, would you have done that if it was the main event? No. You know, I would have taken it much more seriously. I can't say I took it that seriously. It was just so much fun to be there. And most of those guys and I had become very friendly. And so I was sitting at a table with four guys that I'm actually really friendly with. Like Carlos and I have traveled together, and Johnny and I obviously know each other, and Dan Harrington and I have just become friendly, and Robert Varconi was at our table, and it was just and Greg Raymer. It was just so much fun. So the first three hands were semi-cooler hands. You know, like I had jacks and Carlos had kings, and he kind of played him a little bit slow, and the board came, you know, like seven high, and then I turned a straight draw with the jacks. No overcards, so it was really tough to get away from that hand. I could have easily gotten away from it if I was really focused. I wasn't. We're all talking and having fun, and you know, and so I lost a good portion of my chips there. And then the next hand, very next hand, Johnny had aces in the big blind, and he slow played him very smartly, and I hit top pair, and you know, I checked the turn, and he checked the turn, and so I couldn't put him on anything after I bet out, and he just flat called me, and I just thought, he doesn't believe me. He's probably calling. And then on the river, he made a bet, and I called him, and he's had aces. So, you know, and all I had was a queen and our top pair. And so that basically busted me. I had very few chips left. And the next hand, maybe I waited two or three hands, and, you know, I hit a flush draw, straight draw, and I moved it in. And Dan Harrington had top pair, and that was the end of my day. And it literally took about 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I was down there when they did the introductions and everything, and as a fan of poker, it was great just seeing, you know, one after another, after another, after another, these guys come up there and such. Just, this is a question to you. Was there anybody among those 20 people that maybe you hadn't met before, or you wanted to talk to, or, you know, that type of a deal? Who there was most interesting for you to try and snuggle up to for a few minutes? Because, God, I'd have loved to have been able to sit at that table.
I didn't have any time to do that, but there were people I just wanted to shake their hand who I'd never met. I'd never met Jim Bechtel before. I'd also never met Noel Furlong. So that was really nice that I got to meet the two of them. But there's so many of these guys that I don't see very much. Like, I don't get to see Joe Hashem very much. You know, he lives in Australia, and people think he's around all the time, but he's not. So, you know, I had plans to go see him in Australia, and my mom was going to go stay with his mom. And the whole family was going to take care of us. And 2 years in a row, it's been something's always come up that I wasn't able to go to Australia. And so just like Monaco, I've always wanted to go to Monaco. I still haven't been to Monaco. And so for whatever reason, you know, once I get to see people like that, I get excited because there's people who, you know, we become genuinely friendly and you don't get to see them very often. So
If you're a true poker player, you were in seventh heaven there with these two tables.
It was pretty amazing.
It really was.
It was pretty special.
Jamie, do you change strategy when you're playing against great, great players as opposed to maybe a local ring game, cash game? Do you say, I'm going to do this or I'm going to try to do that?
I would have, but I have to say again, I didn't really focus on this as much as I would have if I was just honored to be there, and I wasn't thinking, how am I going to win the car? You know what I mean? I actually don't have. We had all talked about this. I wasn't sure what I would do with it. I have nowhere to put it. No, really, we have no. You know, you can't leave things outside of where I live. So my garage is full. I've been driving a Toyota Corolla for the last 7 years. I'm not a car guy. I just don't care that much.
Yeah.
So it didn't really mean anything to me other than it would have been really nice to win, but I was just having fun. I came out here. My mom flew out here, and I have 25 friends that are out here. And, you know, I hate to say it because it seems as if I didn't take it seriously. It's not that I didn't – I don't want to say I didn't take it seriously. I just – I wasn't focused on how can I win this.
But it – actually, to tell you something, and this I could see because I might have been in the same thing. The game was almost secondary. If
right.
you sit down
right.
there with Doyle on one side of you and Slim on another one and Joe across here.
Right,
whoever,
we're all telling
whoever,
stories.
Whoever,
and
the game was almost second.
We were talking
fiddle.
About, you know, that Johnny Chan had made – my mom was sitting behind him that he had made us – dinner, because I have a very odd diet where I eat every couple of hours, and so I can eat dinner at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? It's because I'm eating all day, very small, and he made us this amazing dinner out of nothing. He had this. We were in the Turks and Caicos Islands, and it was the Johnny Chan Invitational. I had just won, so of course, you know, I wanted to take my mom hadn't been on a trip for 6.5 years except to come to Vegas to see me. And my dad almost made it, but we had a hospital plane, and then he couldn't get on the plane. And so mm-hmm. it was the only time I knew my mom was going to have a break until my dad passed, which we could have been 3 days, could have been a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I took her to the Turks and Caicos Islands with me, and Johnny was so kind, and he had made us. And so we were talking about this story, and you know, next thing you know, I'm half my chips are gone. You know, and so it is. You're right. It's the tournament was secondary. Yes, if there was $1 million to win in it. Not and again, it's yeah. not that the money's so important, but it wasn't a thing to focus on so much as it was to enjoy the time with the people you were there with.
Yeah,
and so, you know, it was what it was. It's I was just, you know, and I had been interviewed beforehand by Gary Wise, and he said, you know, give me a really good quote, and I said, I got it. He said, how badly do you want to win this? And I said, truthfully, it's not really important. Like, I don't believe that it makes you the best champion of all time or anything.
Right.
You know, the people say, well, what happens to the guy who wins? Does that mean he's the best of all the – look, if anybody knows, it's basically a sit and go.
Right.
You know, any one time, anybody can win. It doesn't prove anything, not because I was first out. If I had destroyed it, it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool to be there.
Anybody that plays enough poker
right.
knows what you just said is absolutely true.
I mean, people were all in, you know, in the first 5 minutes. It's just, you know, right. we were there to have fun. We were there to, you know, and I knew that I had to be back in L.A. anyway. I have to be back tomorrow for one of my closest friends. His movie called The Hangover, which you should go see,
mm-hmm.
Is premiering in L.A. And when they do the big, like, at the Man's Chinese and then at the Roosevelt Hotel, and it's going to be a pretty amazing. I think they spend as much as some people spend on a movie on these premieres. And it's a hell of a time, especially when, you know, one of your friends wrote it and directed it. So I'm so excited to get back. People are asking, why am I not playing these tournaments? How can I play a tournament today when I can't do day two?
Who's your friend? Give him a plug.
Oh, Todd Phillips. Yeah, he wrote it and directed it. He did old school.
Oh, my long-lost cousin.
Old school road trip, Starsky and Hutch. And so go see The Hangover. It's going to be awesome.
Actually takes place here in Las Vegas,
It does
right?
take place in Las Vegas. Mike Tyson is in it. But it's going to be the big comedy of the summer. You know, if you liked Wedding Crashers, if you liked any of those movies, old school, road trip, it's going to be hilarious.
You mentioned your mom a couple of times. So has she become a poker player?
Oh, she's a real poker player. Absolutely. She still has a little ways to go, but she gets it. And I learned how to play poker from her. She just never played Texas Hold'em. But she's now been playing enough that she really gets the game, and she's very, very good. She just needs more experience playing big tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
But she's, you know, she goes down to the Borgata and makes like 3 final tables in a row and then calls me and says how upset she is that she only made 3 final tables in a row and that she didn't win any of them. And I'm trying to explain to her, to win the tournament is just gravy. You make 3 final tables in a row, that's an amazing accomplishment. And so she thinks all that matters is like, she compares herself to me, you know, like basically that because before I won the main event, I was winning all of these little tournaments and I probably won 10 or 11 in the span of a couple of months. And so she sees it like that's what you're supposed to do. No, I had been on a huge run. I got lucky. I was very fortunate. I was in this crazy zone. It's all I did with my life at that time was basically playing after work every night. And so her standards are extremely high.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't win it. She comes in second. She thinks something went wrong.
You know, it's funny that you say you got lucky because I think a lot of times people that want to take a shot at whoever wins whatever it is and what tournament it is, oh, he got lucky. I am by far, I think you played amazing. I mean, the way that you got people to lay down hands, the way you got to outplay these people, to get them to call when you were strong, I thought it was unbelievable.
I thought I did my best. I don't know if it's the best that anybody could do, but it was my best.
Well, for that tournament, for how you played, I thought it was phenomenal. I really think you played very, very well. You know,
and I got lucky to not get unlucky. You know what I mean? If just because I went in with the best of it 90% of the time doesn't mean that nobody drew out on me. You know what I mean? So that happens all the time. You know.
Right.
So what? I have aces, you have deuces. The deuce didn't come.
Right.
Yep. So I was very lucky not to get unlucky.
Right. There's many different definitions of running good and situationally running good. And he has this.
So call it lucky because I didn't get unlucky.
Right.
Well, it's a perfect thing. People keep talking about how I got my aces cracked. Well, almost pre-flop, the best you have is an 80-20. That means you will lose one out of five. And I guarantee
if your head's up.
Absolutely. Right? If your head's up.
Usually.
I guarantee in that main event, you're going to have more than five races in this thing. You're going to lose some. It's just going to happen.
Yep.
And this is the
thing. Nobody's ever won a tournament without getting lucky. There's no such thing.
You had built up such a big chip stack.
You could
take a hit.
There you go.
I had never been at risk after day one. Never once.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Which is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, that is.
Not because of my skill. It just happened that way. It's just I'd never had anybody with more chips put me in since day one. So that was very fortunate, too, that there was never a shot of me losing.
When we talked a few weeks ago, we talked about the so-called Jamie Gold rule.
There is one, and
you talked about how you think it's ridiculous, and we had agreed with you 100%. I played the 1K this weekend. A guy at my table got called for it. He was trying to talk the other guy into a call, and the guy called the floor and said, "This guy's berating me."
Was he?
No way.
Right.
He wasn't even close to it.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, he was. You know, he was just trying to get this guy to lay his hand down or call, whatever he was trying to do. I don't know. Maybe it was a reverse thing, whatever it was. And the floor came over and gave that guy a warning. And I thought to myself,
at least it was just a warning.
That's what I would say. I'm glad it was to hear. I was wondering. I'm glad to hear.
I thought if you were going to say they just believed the guy who was, who was accusing.
But now with the new system, you go into the computer.
This is true.
You know, they're keeping track of every warning and every penalty that they give. And as the whole thing goes along, in fact, Jack
Effel. I talked to Jeffrey about it.
Jack, the tournament director.
I think that's a Phil Hellmuth rule now because he was berating people and yelling at them.
I think it's a combination of several things, but Phil definitely put it over the top.
Because I had never insulted anybody. I've never been rude to anybody. I never was mean to anybody.
Right.
There's a whole difference. I wasn't trying to put people on tilt.
Yeah.
I was trying to play the game. And to me, that's competition. That's the game.
And this guy at my table wasn't doing anything that even was close to berating. And for them to give him even a penalty.
It's now in the system.
Right.
For all 57 events, if you do it on event one, then you do it in event five, you're going to have two marks against you. And then you're on 57 in the main event. You do something similar and somebody calls the floor. They're going to be able to look at it and say, third time he's done it, it's time for him to get a penalty.
And you know what? Let's be clear on what is the Jamie Gold rule. It's for people that maybe don't know. I mean, what is it exactly?
It's any time you try to induce or reduce action based on verbal speech play. So you can say, I have two cards. But if you say, I have the best hand, don't call, you can't do that.
Right. You can't.
It's not even saying you have ace king. You can't even say, I have a great hand.
Even if it's heads
it's
up.
It's silly. Yes.
I can see multi-way action.
Of course. Well, at that time, you shouldn't be saying anything.
You shouldn't say anything.
Yes.
But if you're heads up, I'm in the group, I think, like you guys, now that we're talking. I love that you're able to do that. I love that you're able to outplay people talk.
But you're not. I was just in Ireland, and they have a rule there that there basically are no rules, which it was the best. So I'm going to be at the Irish Open every single year, no matter what. And I got really far. Like, I did really well. And I felt like this is what it should all be about. If you insult somebody, now you have a problem. But as long as you're just playing the game, you can say the exact two cards in your hand. Why not?
I mean, Daniel,
you should even be able to show one. You're just giving them information. Why couldn't you? Why in the middle of a hand, if we're heads up, I can't turn over a card? Why not? Yeah. I should be able to turn over both my cards if I want to.
I would have to think most poker players would not like this rule.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
I don't know
this
one
is not
that
to
I've
protect
met,
poker.
So,
not
so
one. I've
we,
never heard one person.
No.
I mean, what
well,
is going
it,
on to
it,
change
you've
this
got a problem
bad
here,
rule?
But they told me it got really close, though, this year that it almost changed, that they almost made it so that you could say anything you want.
But you know what hurt it? Phil and Scotty last
year.
Because
exactly
they went so far over the line.
Right. Because it, so it's not that. That has one has nothing to do
absolutely.
With the other.
That's
one
right.
is totally separate. One is being a dick.
Yes.
You know? And the other one is actually playing the game.
Absolutely yeah, right.
I agree with it. I just I horrible thing. Because not only that, but you were asking about let's say what it is. We don't know what it is because it's interpretation of the rule. You know, right. what does inhibit it? What does stop the
and
action?
And it's not exactly clear.
You know, who knows? Right. Exactly not.
And yes, there's somebody basically every in the main event, there's someone on me. They actually yeah. have someone like staring at me the whole time to see what I say and what I do. And it's just.
Oh. See, that's not right within
it's silly.
Itself.
It's silly. No.
You know, last year, Phil got the kind of Kobe Bryant type deal where a lot of people feel, you know, he gets the foul or doesn't
you're
get
talking
the foul.
To a Laker fan
that's
here.
Why I see the hat.
For Jamie, it's everything true. Kobe does is right.
No,
I see the hat.
But you know, you're absolutely right. He did. And it was, and they were wrong not to say something to him. You know, I mean,
when the other people at the table, including Mike Manasseh, says you're way over the top, you're wrong.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's unanimous around the table that Phil was in the wrong there.
And don't forget, they didn't show you everything.
Oh, not even.
They're
close.
Showing you a small part of what really went yeah. on. And with Scotty, to you know, no matter what you think of him, he is a friend of mine. So of course I'm, you know, I'm more inclined to defend him. But no matter what you think of him, the way they edited it, it wasn't exactly like that. You know what I mean? It wasn't exactly like him just being an absolute asshole the whole time. They took the few moments where he absolutely got drunk and got out of line, but. Look, you know, we've all in our lifetime have had moments where maybe we said something we shouldn't have said it. They definitely made him look a lot worse than, you know, he was absolutely out of line. But he was a moment out of line, and they made it look like he was, you know, 3 days out of line. Like, well, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, what bothered me somewhat, again, using the two same examples, and again, I like Phil and I like Scotty, but what bothered me on it is they got over the top, they got out of line, but they didn't then realize it themselves and do anything about it. Right. So when Phil tries to apologize, he still insults you.
Right.
How about okay? the apology?
That's right. what I'm
talking about. The apology was horrible.
The yes. apology was an insult.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, give me a break.
Jamie, I know you got to run and go meet your mom, as a matter of fact.
Yes, I do.
Play poker against her or whatever. But one last question for you. In the 1K this year, 6,000 people in there, which means you got a $6 million prize pool. First place was only $777,000, which means they have completely flattened out the payments, taken a lot away from the top to pay more people more money down the line. So that leads to this question. You are the all-time money winner in the main event with your $12 million win. Will there ever be anybody who beats you? Will we have a big enough field, even with these flattened payment structures, that someone will make more than $12 million in the main event?
Yes.
How soon do you
yes.
think?
Yes. You know, I figured before it got flattened out, I'm hoping for this. I don't want to be the all-time, you know, all I wanted to do was win the World Series of Poker. I did that.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking for it, nor do I spend my life. You know, I haven't been playing for 20 years, so people say, you know, do you love being on top of the all-time money? No, I don't deserve to be. You know what I mean? There are people who've been doing this every day for 20 years. They mm-hmm. deserve it. Like, and if I do something every day for 20 years, I hope I'm on top too.
Yeah.
But this is not what I spend most of my time doing. So it's... You know, if I win another big one, then yeah, it'll, you know, then we can talk. But but I've only accomplished a very small, you know, an amazing accomplishment, but in the terms of a lifetime of as a poker player, a very small accomplishment. And so I believed that someone was going to be ahead of me in 2 years. But now with the flattened structure, you know, but maybe the boom will go so big when it goes completely legal, which it should
That's
be already,
exactly what I agree
that
with.
That I'm thinking it'll hit anyway.
I think in 2, 3, 4 years, whenever it is,
yeah.
about 2 years after it goes legal, because it could take a little time to catch up with, about 2 years after it goes legal,
oh.
you're going to see an unbelievable main 10, event
10,000 people in the main event?
Absolutely.
I think it'll be a $30 million first
yeah,
prize.
Yeah, I do too. I think
like
it's going to be some monstrous, unbelievable
yeah.
thing.
And I do, and I also, do, I also do believe that they should up it, you know, that they maybe make the main event buy-in. You know, $30,000 or whatever.
Well, Jeffrey said that it's been 10,000. It'll be 10,000 this year. We are reviewing it every year because it's been this way for so long. And at some time, it may actually.
But you
get
can't have 20,000 people playing in a main event. You just can't.
Yeah.
Could you? I don't.
No,
I don't think it would be. I don't think it'd be fun. I think after a while, you should make it. You know, don't price people out, but make it 20,000. So
exactly.
that whatever. You know what I mean? But make it so that. You know, you have 10,000 people and $200 million in the prize pool.
That's
we're
not
talking,
too bad,
we're
is
talking
it?
About a $30 million first prize,
there
right?
You go.
Even when the flattened.
I don't want to sign up for the main event and get assigned day 1G.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's first of all, there are people who are not professional poker players that have lives. That you're actually screwing people by making it that way, because most people can't take 15 days out of their life.
Right.
It's already hard. I know there are a lot of my friends who are very famous, and we're trying to get them involved because it'll help the World Series of Poker to have celebrities playing. But they can't take, you know, like, great, yep. if I get – I'll play one day, 2 days, 3 days. I can't take 10 days out of my life.
Yeah.
You know, 10 days is a lot to ask somebody, especially in this economy. People have jobs. I have a job. You know, it's hard enough for me to, you know, to get away. And so I don't I agree with you guys that you should keep it the way it is, but – up it a little bit so that at least there's...
Well, and we've broken ground on it. Look at the high roller events. But now that it's not unusual to see a 20,000 or a 25, it is unusual for a 40, but we've now broken the ground. So then I think next year if you come out and say the main event's going to be 20,000, there won't be the objection to it that there would have been if we'd have never had anything bigger than that.
Right. I think it should be. That maybe. But you know what? They'll keep it at 10 when it gets legal, internet, you know, the whole thing. Then it'll have to go.
It'll have to. I agree with
you. And don't forget, the World Series of Poker obviously has their own site now. They're going to be satelliting people. They're going to have, who knows, they could be satelliting in thousands of people all over the world.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
How many events do you think you're going to play this year?
I don't know. If I had to guess, I would say, I mean, I'm just playing it by ear. So, I mean, I could end up playing 3 events. I could end up playing 5 events. But I won't be playing more than 5. But it could be 2, you know, it's not a financial thing. It's a timing kind of thing. But definitely not more than 5 and definitely the main event I will play.
Right.
Speaking of timing, we really appreciate you coming up here. I know you're crunched for time. It's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Jamie Gold joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. Don't forget, podcasts of the show available on thechipleader.com, and we want your email and comments to dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Show Me, restaurant and franchise. Guys, if you're looking for a good lunch, a good supper, go to Show Me's. You can find one anywhere around the metro area. Be in Fairview Heights, be in O'Fallon, or be right down here by the Lumiere Place. There's one just a couple of blocks from us, right here on the landing. I go there. I love some of their Cajun burgers, love some of the Show Me burgers down there and their chicken sandwiches, and I eat their wings. Hot wings, better than you'll find in any of the other places around St. Louis. Head on down there. They got great specials for lunch, like a chicken sandwich, only $5.95. Grilled, black, and fried, however the heck you want it. It's Show Me's, restaurant and franchise. And by the way, you want a franchise? Opportunity is there. Call Ron Coates, 618-444-4447. That's 618-444-4447. According to Ron, if you buy one, or if your vision's good enough, you can buy an entire state. Go down to Show Me's. A great meal, great waitresses, great time. Show Me's Restaurant, happy to have a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table.
We are back in Las Vegas at the 2009 World Series of Poker in the Dennis Phillips Suite high atop the Rio. Downstairs, 21 floors below us, the World Series of Poker is set up in the Amazon Room, in the Brasilia Room, in the Miranda Room, and, well, they pretty much have taken over the entire convention center. And here's the guy in charge of it all. The commissioner of the World Series of Poker, Jeffrey Pollack. Welcome to the show.
Good to see you. I think we should call this the Dennis Phillips Room.
Officially get the Rio to rename it?
Yes, I think we have to work on that.
That'd be nice.
Okay. Well, the first thing I want to do is, and this is a huge compliment because I don't think I've ever said it before, I've gone to Monte Carlo, to Uruguay, to the Bahamas, to whatever, and you always sit down at the table and the players are always talking about what's going on and they're always complaining about the temperature of the room or, you know, who knows what, right down around the line. I have sat down at table after table after table and had silence, which is a huge compliment to you guys.
You mean no complaints?
No complaints. To have this many poker players in the same room and them not complaining about something is unbelievable. So how do you do this?
It's simple, but it isn't simple. The team at the Rio is really remarkable. And for the last 4 years now, our pledge every year has been to do better than we did the year before. And it's actually an incredible learning organization. We have, and they have, an enormous capacity to sort of see what needs to be improved, to hear and process customer feedback, which is very important to us, and then act on it. And I think last year was our best year ever. So the bar certainly was raised a bit. And our promise to each other was that we're going to try this year, we're going to try to pick up right where we left off at the end of last year, both in July and then with the great vibe and momentum from the November 9. And I think we really did that. This has been our best and smoothest opening ever. And I've experienced the same silence you have. I typically have gotten people stopping me in the hallway in the first few days saying, look, you know, glad I'm here, but you really need to fix this, or this really needs work, or whatever. And I haven't had one complaint, not one. And even the media said to me yesterday, do something wrong because we really have nothing. We have nothing to talk about. So I'm humbled by how great the team is at the Rio. They really are just experts at customer service and at running this tournament. And I think that's being reflected.
Well, you know what? In the midst of all that silence, I have a complaint for you.
Well, bring it on. Let's go.
I played in the stimulus special on the opening weekend, the 1K event. Unbelievable number of people, 6,021 entries.
6,012.
I'm sorry. A little dyslexia on the one and the two there. So 6,012, but still a tremendous number. And yet first place, which I assumed with a $6 million prize pool would be over $1 million, was only $750,000 or $777,000, something like that. You know the exact number, but it was under $1 million. Why have you flattened out the payment structure so much so that the top doesn't get the big prize and the people lower down get more?
Well, first of all, I think getting an ROI off of a $1,000 investment that results in $771,000, that's pretty good.
Hey,
okay, let's be clear about that.
Paul was going to turn it down, actually.
All right,
let's
be clear about that.
I agree with you. I'm sitting here with Dennis, who would put $200 into a tournament and won $4.5 million. So,
now that we've dealt with that issue,
yes.
our goal this year was to create more value for players. And we think that meant increasing the number of starting chips. We also think it meant flattening the payout structures a bit so that at the very top, you're still doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to push further down into the pool of people that cash so that they feel as though the time they're investing in these events really is worth it. So it's about value. And our focus on value this year really came from, in part, what we saw happening in the economy, but also recognition that, if we're going to have maintained the momentum that we had last year, we had to do more to make the experience meaningful for the customer. And you can do that by improving the food service. You can do it by making sure the registration lines are either non-existent or very fast-moving.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that by having all sorts of other ancillary entertainment activities. But we really felt that we needed to make sure we were focused on schedule and structures, and that everywhere we turned, we were trying to convey as much value to the player as possible. And I think that's why we made that decision.
Well, I can see the people who play for 2 days or 2.5 days and end up in the money, that they want to be paid for that, and I completely understand that. And I didn't win the event, so it's a moot point for me. but I was just curious.
I was going to say, you don't look like the guy I gave the bracelet to.
congratulations on the success of that event and the other one. Have you been surprised at the number of people? Because there was a lot of talk, Jeffrey, you know this, in this economy, oh, the World Series of Poker numbers are going to be down this year. Have you been surprised, or did you expect this to be sold out like this?
No, there was no expectation for having the level of activity that we had. We, you know, we plan every year for something, and we always plan for growth. Mm-hmm. I believe that it's important. Instead of planning that you'll be down or be flat, you have to plan as though you will be up, whether or not you actually will be. So, you know, we did plan for better turnout this year, but that doesn't mean that was our expectation. So we're very pleased. Yeah. My lesson from last weekend and my insight, I think, is that we need more events like that. I would like to see more $1,000 big no-limit hold'em events, maybe a couple of more, so that, you know, leading up to the main event, every couple of weeks, we're having sort of the big spectacle. And we're having a great sense of energy in the tournament. And most importantly, we're giving first-timers and amateurs a relatively easy way to enter and experience. And granted, $1,000 is a lot of money for anyone, no matter what the economy. And we take that very seriously. But when the range of buy-in is $1,000 to $50,000, $1,000 is a relatively affordable way of coming in to the WSOP. And I think for first-timers, they want that taste of the bigness. I think that having something that is as big an event as some of the past main events, and actually bigger than most past main events, people get excited about that. And I think we easily could have had a third start day. And I think for next year, and we're already planning for 2010, that started the day we opened up. I think for 2010, we're going to have to take a look at adding a couple more events like that.
Interesting.
Well, I've got a kind of a two-part thing. First of all, how do you, since you can't plan for it, you have no idea what's coming in, when instead of getting the 5,000, which is what you were shooting for, you end up with 6,000 on this one, then how do you handle and dealers for another 1,000 people? How do you handle the floor people for it? How do you make sure that you get to the final table in a timely manner?
Well, again, we prepare for the growth. That doesn't mean I personally expect that we're going to achieve it, but it means that we're prepared for it. So we prepared for every event that we're staging this year. We've prepared for more people coming than last year. So again, don't know if the momentum that we've had for opening, you know, a week or so, I've lost track of the days already, don't know if that's going to maintain throughout the rest of the WSOP, but we're certainly prepared in every event for there to be more people than there were last year. So that's how we're able to do that.
Well, then this is what it leads up to, because with the UIGEA, if I said that correctly, I hope I did, UIGEA, possibilities of that changing. Howard Letter is actually going around saying in 2 to 4 weeks there could be major action on this thing happening. How do you prepare for next year then, if that has been dropped, if all of a sudden you have a massive amount of more poker players playing online, playing actively? I mean, you're going to, you know, throw some cards against the wall and see what sticks? I mean, this is going to be impossible.
I think that while there is terrific initial momentum in Washington for a change in the law, I don't know that anything's going to happen in the next 12 months. The, you know, federal lawmaking is kind of like sausage. You know, you don't necessarily want to see it being made, and sometimes it takes longer than you think. So,
yeah.
You know, when we plan for 2010, we'll plan for all things being equal, you know, the same level of increase that we planned for this year. You know, having 10,000 people want to play in our main event should be our biggest problem, and I welcome that problem one day. and I think that over time we will get there. I don't know that it's going to happen next year, but I believe that, and I don't know that we'll even be up in the main event this year, but I do believe that over time the popularity of the WSOP will continue to grow as it has, and I think the main event will continue its march upward. We had a watershed year a couple of years back, high mark. You know, we dropped from that last year. We started to build out of that. We'll see whether or not we continue that build this year. I really don't know, but we'll get to 10,000 in the main event at some point. I'd say over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, you got
to
get 712. I got to win my prop bet. 7,011 is my prop bet.
For this year?
For this year. So you have to have 7,012.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I mistakenly took the under. Long before this whole thing started, I didn't think you'd get there because of the economy. Now, having been here and seen what you got early on, I think you may get there in the main event. And I know you don't like to pick numbers, but I want to ask you about the business side of this. Talk to me about sponsors. When are the big, huge Pepsis and Apple computers and AT&Ts and Travelocity, when are they going to realize that poker and the World Series of Poker in particular are a place that they want to be?
You didn't mention GM. What's the problem?
we have a long way to go there. That said, we do have some very strong category-leading consumer product companies in the WSOP. We have Hertz. We have Kraft. We have Miller. We now have Jack Link's Beef Jerky, the proud presenting sponsor of the World Series of Poker, and others. So it's not as though we don't have great companies, we don't have great leading brands. It is true that poker is not as mainstreamed as people may think it is, especially in the sports marketing world. While we're on ESPN, while we are the seventh most admired sports brand in North America, which is pretty good for a poker property, the companies that fuel the sports marketing industry still have to realize what we are and the audience that we offer. And there's still a bit of a stigma attached to poker. It is Las Vegas. It's not an athletic competition, and it's poker. And we think that's great. We think that our tradition, our history, our heritage, the fact that we're connected to Las Vegas, that's reason to celebrate. But that doesn't mean we're for everyone. So we're still in the early days of mainstreaming poker as a sports marketing property, but we're off to a very good start. I will feel as though we have been successful when more players have more individual endorsement deals from consumer product companies beyond poker sites, right? That's a very different beast. I'm talking about General Motors, Ford.
They still got advertising dollars.
I'm talking about companies that would otherwise sponsor a NASCAR driver. I want to see those companies sponsoring our players, and for that there have been some great initial advances. For that, we have a very long way to go.
Do you find corporate America holding its nose when the word poker comes up?
I wouldn't say holding its nose. Sometimes we don't even get into the room. It's a very hard sell. But I think, again, we've 4 years ago, there wasn't one leading consumer product company involved in the World Series of Poker or poker, maybe 5 years ago. And now there are. And we've broken the ground. We've planted the flag. Now we just need to keep building. And it's going to take some time.
Well, you look at 10 years ago, you look at 5 years ago, you look where they're at right now. Anybody that's got any kind of a brain can see 5 years from now, if their progress continues, where they're going to be at. And the volume of players and the coverage on TV and everything else, yeah, it's going to go. I would think a corporate company of some sort looking at this and looking at that growth would just want to jump on the early stages. This is the perfect time to do it.
Jeffrey, your parent company, Harrah's, just spun off a new company, a new division called Harrah's Interactive Gaming. Of which, are you president of that as well?
I am president of that.
And you've got a CEO who comes from Party Gaming, which is the huge online poker site in Europe. Does that mean that Harrah's is getting its feet on the ground and starting to run a little bit in the hopes that online poker gets legalized here in the United States soon? You were talking before about it not happening in the 12 months, but is this a brick-and-mortar casino company getting involved in online poker?
I didn't say it won't happen 12 months. I said I wouldn't count on it happening in 12 months.
I see a prop coming.
I just want to make sure I'm waffling as well as I always do, or being vague. It goes without saying that as the world's largest gaming company, it's incumbent upon Harrah's to explore interactive and digital technologies where we can, in markets where we can. And to also start looking at growing the WSOP internationally in potentially some new ways. So, yes, Mitch Garber came in as CEO of this new entity, Harrah's Interactive Entertainment. I'm president of it. I continue on as commissioner. And the goal is to grow the WSOP in ways that we may not have been able to before, and to look at how Harrah's as a whole and its brands, its portfolio of brands, can start taking advantage of some new technologies out there. So I think it's pretty self-evident.
Is that a yes, you're going to get into online poker?
I think I answered the question.
Jeffrey Pollock, our next politician. There we go. Well done.
We know
my secret ambition is to maybe, you know, run for office one day. So, well, but so, you know, maybe this is practice.
That was a pretty good non-answer answer. I like that. A non-denial denial. Please don't think this is confirmation or denial, or take my lack of confirmation or denial as a confirmation
that
or denial.
That was a very good parsing of it. Touche.
Jeffrey, thanks for your time today. We know you've got to run off and get another event going, or give away a bracelet, or fix something downstairs. You've been going nonstop for a couple of weeks, and you got a long way to go, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's always good to talk to you guys. Would love to come back and visit. You know, we're really just at the beginning here at the WSOP. I think we have another 40, 41 days to go, but who's counting? I will come back and report from the field to you.
That'll be great.
Excellent. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, guys.
Jeffrey Pollock, Commissioner of the World Series of Poker, here at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
It's Poker on Your Radio. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS. Now, here are two guys giving off reverse tells and trying to take your stack, Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
Back from the Rio in Las Vegas, the home of the 2009 World Series of Poker, it's Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips, and we're joined now by Brian Spadaro, who's the member relations manager for the PPA. You hear us talking about the PPA every week on this show because the Poker Players Alliance is one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. And one of the reasons we asked Brian into our broadcast suite today is to update us on where we are in getting poker legal in every form in America. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you.
Tell us, well, what's the status? We talked a couple of weeks ago about the Barney Frank bill. Where is that, and what's the near future look like?
Well, H.R. 2267 was introduced a couple weeks ago by Chairman Frank, and since then it's gotten about 30 co-sponsors. Not the same number as the IGREA bill of last year, but we're still gaining support. The bill is a little different than last year's bill. It does have some language in it that would preclude sports betting online, but it still met a lot of opposition from certain sports leagues, saying that it's not enough for them to be happy. So that's probably the biggest sticking point right now. But you know, there's a lot of work to be done before the bill becomes marked up and ever sees a vote. So we're working very closely with Chairman Frank's office on that and our concerns on how to make the bill as good for poker players as possible.
We talked on the show recently about Harrah's naming the former head of Party Gaming, which runs Party Poker in Europe, naming him the head of their new interactive media division. Does that mean that Harrah's is getting into online gaming in some way? And does that mean that the brick-and-mortar casinos in America might be weakening in their attacks on online poker?
Well, I don't want to speak for Harrah's, but I can say that from what I've seen, their support for us as the PPA has been outstanding. They provided us with, you know, a great location here at the World Series of Poker to promote the PPA's message, to help raise memberships. And they've been nothing but extremely supportive of what we're trying to do. As to some of their, you know, business plans for a possible internet site, I can't really speak to that.
But it would help the PPA and poker players in general if all of the people who own brick-and-mortar casinos realize that online poker in the long run is good for them because it drives business to them when people come to Las Vegas or anywhere else, right?
Well, of course. Absolutely.
Well, not only that, but now the support you've got from the WSOP, having Jeffrey up there on the stand and telling everybody you've got to sign up for the PPA, it's a great organization, you know, right in front of thousands of poker players. Had to be awesome for you guys.
Oh, it was great. And one of the cool things that I saw immediately was I'm just figuring out Twitter and some of the new media stuff, and my feed started to explode after he said that because every pro in the room started retweeting it to all of their people.
Yep.
So that message got out to, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people as it was spread over the internet just by Jeffrey saying some great stuff about us on the floor in front of, you know, only about 2,000 people. The message got really, really pumped out there, so we were very excited.
Well, that may have been only 2,000 people, but let me tell you, those 2,000 people, 2000, no people.
Yeah, 2,000 awesome supporters of the PPA.
It's like that shampoo commercial years ago. We'll tell two people, and they'll tell two people, and so on. Pretty soon, we all have hair on our head again.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just speaking for me and Dennis.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, in your dreams and mine, too, but that's all right.
Will you be getting that announcement before every event?
Not every event, but Jeffrey has been very... very willing to do the announcement about every week, probably during some of the bigger field events. We'll see it when you've got a lot of new players coming in for, you know, a weekend 1500 or something like that. He's planning on doing that. Our Nevada state director, Diana D'Onofrio, will be doing a shuffle up and deal during one of the big events. So we're excited about that as well. Just, you know, getting some people to do it. And actually we may have Chairman Frank out during the main event to do the same thing, to do a shuffle.
Oh, that would be great.
So we're hoping that happens, but we're not too sure about that just yet.
And what's the response been in terms of after the announcement of the 1K this weekend? Did you get more members?
Oh, I mean, I think just with the year of education for people about what the PPA is about, the response from players has been almost a complete 180. People are coming up to the booth like, hey, you know, I'm so happy you're here. Tell me how to join. How do I help? And we've got numbers in the last 2 days that probably would surpass the first 2 weeks of last year's World Series.
Everything at this WSOP seems to be surpassing last week. The new patches you have, too, that you were kind enough to give me one, and I will wear the entire World Series on that, are getting some attention. That nice little blue thing. Who designed that anyway? I'm kind of curious.
Howard Lederer. Actually.
No kidding.
Yeah, he designed those.
I can't tell him that. Oh, doggone it.
Howard's a board member of the PPA and has been a great ambassador of the game to Congress. And Howard came up with a bunch of different designs, and that was the one we all thought really popped.
Sweet. Okay.
So that's what we went with.
Well, the other thing with the PPA, and I know I've done it a dozen times on the show, but they were the people that coordinated and put together my trip to Walter Reed, which when I'm ever asked, well, what's been one of the most awesome things that's happened in the last year, that always comes to the forefront. So again, I thank you very much for that. I look forward to doing it again. You guys do a great job in all of this, putting it together. If you want me to talk to good old Barney, I will, but I don't know what good that would do. But anyhow, I'll support you guys any way I can. You know that.
Thank you. You're planning another event with some poker pros back in Washington right after the main event, right?
Yes, we are. We are definitely going to do a fly-in of poker pros. We did a fly-in in 2006 around the same time with members of the PPA, PPA volunteer state directors from across all 50 states. To come to D.C. and meet with their elected officials, be it their senators or their congressmen from where they live. And we had a really great response in 2006, and we're looking to blow that out of the water in 2009.
Fantastic.
And you made a comment earlier about different people, representatives actually coming up and wanting to get their picture taken with them. So these guys, I had the same thing around St. Louis with some of the local politicians there.
Yeah.
They may not want to see me out in the daylight, but they want a private picture to hang on their wall, I think, or something. I don't know. It was just hilarious.
It's very funny walking, you know, a troop of six or seven big-name poker pros through like the congressional office buildings and having elected officials come up to you and say, hey, can we get a picture with these guys?
I love it.
Yes, sir. You're more than welcome.
Yes. Would you sign here? It's a bill. We just need your name added to those at the bottom here. We need co-sponsors, co-signers on this thing. Well, Brian, continued success to you at the WSOP in getting more members for the Poker Players Alliance. We, of course, are more than happy on the Lumiere Plays Final Table to send people to the website, ppa.org or pokerplayersalliance.org. It's just $20 to join, right?
Yep.
And every poker player, online or offline or home game or wherever, should be a member. So thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Brian Spadaro of the Poker Players Alliance here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. Don't forget, podcasts of the show available on thechipleader.com, and we want your email and comments to dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. We'll see you again next Tuesday night from the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, brought to you in part by PokerStars on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.